Hey, this is Bob Stelton from the Bob Gross and Tom Show. I want to thank you for listening to the John Clayton Show. And you know what would be great is if you checked out the Bob Gross and Tom Show every day from noon to 3. You can stream us live at 710sports.com or on the 710 Sports app or listen on demand.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
And good morning, everybody, on this Friday. Made it through the week. And, of course, hope you have a good weekend coming up. Lots of things happening. Of course, there's about nine teams that are having, including the Seahawks, their rookie mini camps. That's going on. Big baseball series coming up against the Angels. Lots of NBA stuff. Let's waste no time. Let's get into the five biggest stories of the day.
Number one.
The 1-2 pitch, swing, and a miss, strike three, and a 99-mile-an-hour fastball. Sugar with a save. How sweet it is. And the Mariners beat Oakland tonight. A final score of 4-1. They win the series 2-1 for Edwin Diaz. His 13th save of the season. And that leaves every closer in Major League Baseball with those 13 saves.
So, the Mariners get the victory last night. They win the series against Oakland. And, of course, we are taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. Wade LeBlanco's four scoreless innings, three hits. That was good. Jason Bradford, you know, gave up a first-pitch home run. But then he came out and retired the next seven batters in a row. And I know when we talked to him last week, he kept on talking about the importance of guys that can come into the game in the fifth inning. That's now a big part of what's being done. And that was a big part of the win last night. And then, of course, I guess the best story is Juan Nicasio, because, of course, he was the one who gave the two runs that, you know, eventually cost the Mariners and cost James Paxton a chance to get a great win on Wednesday night. And so what he did, he was mad at himself, and he was on fire. And so what he ended up saying, and he's telling Edwin Diaz, if I can't hit 97 miles an hour, he was going to retire. And so what he ended up doing is, you know, getting a 97-mile-an-hour pitch on the gun for a strikeout, struck out three or four batters in an angry sense to get them through the eighth inning, and that was the victory. D. Gordon continues his hot hitting. He was able to get 3-for-4, two stolen bases, and two run scores. And Edwin Diaz, as you heard, getting that 13 saves. So now it's a matter of trying to go ahead and get the Angels. And this series is very important, because when you start to look at the analytics and all that stuff, at least according to FanGraphs and all that, they project the Angels right now to have 87 wins, and right now the Mariners to have 84. And so you need to win a series against a team that you're kind of batting fourth with, because again, they just moved into second place, and of course the Mariners are right there a half game behind. So big series coming up, and that's Around the Diamond, brought to you by Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business.
Number two.
I have a manager who has a lot of heart, cares about players. I haven't felt this way. What I do now is, what I feel now is that I want to do whatever I can for our manager. I haven't felt that in a long time, where I want to really play hard for a human being, and he's definitely one of them. And so those are the reasons why I've had the happy times here.
And so that was a Giro? Wow. Dormar, was that
translator?
Oh, that was the translator. Okay, yeah. So I was wondering, it's like, okay, do we
never heard him talk before?
Yeah, it's like, wow, did we get to hear the voice of Ichiro? It's like, well, I guess not. But you know, John Boggs, of course, he was telling the NLB Network that technically he's not retiring, but what he's doing is a different role this year, and that role is going to be, you know, working with the team, working with the outfielders, being in uniform, making the home trips or the home and visiting trips and all that stuff, and so. Ichiro transitioning out of baseball, at least for now. Not out of baseball, I guess out of playing, and then going to revisit it, I guess, next season. But he is not going to play this year. That's a certainty. And you now know that you know, his career may very well end here in Seattle. What a great career it has been. I mean, a career that has just been spectacular, one that's been so enjoyable to watch, 2,500-plus hits, all those different things. And, you know, they're trying to make sure it was the right way. I mean, you knew, unfortunately for Ichiro, that he was going to be off the roster because, you know, you can't carry that many outfielders as long as they did. And they were carrying three outfielders or five outfielders. And so something had to give, and that would have been his space. And so now, you know, he's not going to play the rest of this season. But, of course, he still remains with the team. Eric Adell was promoted from AAA. So now the 25-man roster is set, and Ichiro, at least his career on hold.
Number three.
They have a responsibility to stay fresh as well. They have a responsibility to see it new. They have a responsibility to keep making this a challenge for themselves. And somewhere in there, that's what I'm telling you. There's some way to, of course I do. Shoot, yeah, man, I'm a teacher. I got to help these guys learn. I got to do whatever it takes to get that done and get the communication right. So we're constantly tweaking. We're constantly evolving. They need to do the same. And the freshness can come from both directions. Or see you later. It's the right place, go. You have to go. You're out of here. You know, and so that's a point I don't mind making about. It was time for these guys to move on.
Very interesting. It's Pete Carroll on Brock and Salk talking about Michael Bennett and Richard Sherman, two guys that he felt needed to move on. And, not going into a lot of details, but again, you kind of get the feeling that Bennett did not buy in to all the moves that had been made or what's going on, the future of the team. Same thing with Richard Sherman. And so what he ends up saying is that if you're not there, it's time to go. And it was time to go. Still no time to go for Earl Thomas. Earl Thomas still remains with this team. He's not at the voluntary workouts. Question's going to be, will he be there at the start of training camp? John Snyder, talking about Earl Thomas, did say that he's thinking that everything should be okay. Again, they don't know for sure, but in the meantime, they're going to try to get some playing time, at least in the preseason and all that, with Tedrick Thompson and Delano Hill. Today is the rookie minicamp at 1:30, and there's a lot of things to look forward to see what's going to be going on with the first round pick at running back and what's going to be going on with the punter. All those things ahead as the Seahawks get on the field today.
Number four.
Really good quarterback who is coming up upon a new deal. So it's a 5-year, $150 million extension on top of the 1 year Ryan had left on his old deal. And that $100 million in guarantees, which is a word that gets thrown around sometimes, Andrew, my understanding is that is all fully guaranteed by next March. So that is a legit $100 million fully guaranteed commitment that the Falcons are making to Matt Ryan as their quarterback moving forward, which also sets, of course, the bar for Aaron Rodgers' contract in Green Bay.
And, of course, it's not $100 million. It's $94.5 is what it really is. And $46.5 was the signing bonus, but a $17.7 million cap number. But Matt Ryan becomes the first $30 million player in the National Football League. That sets up Aaron Rodgers gets the next deal. I'll probably at $31.75, and then we'll see where it goes for Russell Wilson.
Number five.
He's hotter than fish grease. Wow.
LeBron James is putting on a show, mainly because he's had the mismatches, whether off the dribble, and then there's that monster fade. He's feeling it tonight. He really has it, and it's been a major weapon here in the second and third quarters.
There is a palpable air of dismay and discontent here in the building. They've seen this movie before.
And you saw, it looks like it's starting to heat up now for LeBron after a very kind of an average series by the Cleveland Cavaliers, but great series to start out with LeBron James. LeBron gets 43 points, 8 rebounds, 14 assists, and Cleveland just blows out the Raptors, 128-110. So now they lead the series 2-0. And then on the other side, the Boston Celtics are picking up at the right time, and the Sixers are starting to fade. The Celtics overcame a 22-point deficit to beat the Sixers last night, 108-103. So that series 2-0 Celtics, and looks like both Philly and Toronto starting to fade, and of course Boston and the Cavs may be heading on to that conference championship. Hey, you can listen to my show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealers. Coming up next, we go under further review. We'll listen to John Snyder. We'll listen to Pete Carroll. We'll listen to what they're saying about the team as they get on the field today with the rookies. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the Professor John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Under further review with John Clayton.
We'll review the play.
And, of course, every day at 10:15, we go under further review, taking over the big stories. And, of course, the big story today is, of course, the rookie minicamp, but also the fact that John Snyder was out talking about the team. Pete Carroll talked with Brock and Salk today. And so lots of things to get into. And, of course, this all comes at a time when, a lot of people were thinking toward the future and wondering, okay, what's going to happen with Russell Wilson's contract? And yesterday plopped down the first $30 million contract in the National Football League with Matt Ryan getting the 5-year, $150 million deal, $94.5 million of it guaranteed. So the one thing that, of course, popped up a couple weeks ago was it seemed like Russell Wilson's agent was not happy that John Snyder was looking at Josh Allen. Now, of course, there was no way the Seahawks were going to get Josh Allen. I mean, he ends up being the 7th pick in the draft, and there's no way you're going to be able to trade up from the 18th pick all the way to the 7th pick. So what it came down to is that John wanted to take a look-see at a very young quarterback.
No, I mean, I talked to Mark often, Rogers, who represents Russ. I mean, we've been through a lot, and, you know, I just let him know. I was supposed to see him play when we played down in San Francisco, and I wasn't able to see him play live. And, you know, when you don't see somebody play live, it's just makes it that much harder with the research. And so I wanted to see him go throw the ball around at the school, and yeah, it really was not that big a deal at all. I guess it was a real down time in your world.
Yeah, so really, it wasn't a big deal because, again, it was a player that they weren't going to get. But if you're John Snyder, you want to see as many good players as you can. You want to get a gauge on Josh Allen. And so for Mark Rogers and some of the people on the side of Russell Wilson wondering about that, I mean, there was nothing to wonder about. There was nothing to really go on. So John Snyder kind of clearing that up. No surprise. He doesn't think it's a big deal. We'll see where it goes. But, of course, the big deal is now what's going to happen with Russell Wilson, you know, who's now heading toward the end of his contract. He's up at the end of next year. You know, John Snyder had to talk about, you know, what that deal is. Does it have any effect on Russell Wilson?
No, not really. God bless him, though. That's pretty awesome.
So that doesn't make you sweat.
Ryan, I guess he can afford a big screen at his house, huh?
I think he's going to be buying big screens for the O linemen.
Wow.
He's going to be just fine. Wow.
Some people refer to that as generational wealth.
Well, it's wealth nevertheless, and of course, that was John Snyder on with Bob Gross and Tom talking about the Matt Ryan deal, which popped yesterday afternoon. Here's my read, is that I think what will end up happening is that it'll be Aaron Rodgers in the next few weeks getting a deal of like $31.75, and that would really, as you go back to the last deal done by Russell Wilson, is that, sure, I know Mark Rodgers will try to top that, but what you can probably see him accept, maybe, as long as Russell Wilson's willing to accept it, is just a little bit less than Aaron Rodgers. I can't see Russell getting more money than Aaron Rodgers. The last time, Aaron Rodgers was at $22 million, and Russell ended up getting $21.9 million, but it's still going to be a little bit of a battle, but one that, you got to take care of your quarterback, because if you don't take care of your quarterback, you're not going to win, and this team wants to take care of its quarterback. John Snyder was also, really positive looking back at the draft, because the biggest thing that he was able to acquire, particularly on offense, was competition.
I think it's gonna be a fun group. It's gonna be wide open competition, especially when you got those guys, like Lockett and Doug, and then now we've added to the room. So it's gonna be exciting. Got some rookie free agents we're excited about seeing. Kid from Vanderbilt and a kid from West Virginia. So yeah, we're just gonna keep evaluating it all the way through. Don't sleep on Uncle Will either. He's pretty fun.
And Uncle Will is Will Disley, the blocking tight end from the University of Washington, taken in the 4th round. And he's something that John Snyder really wants, and because he traded up to make sure he was able to get him, because he was worried that somebody else was going to do this. And so, a lot of people were wondering, okay, they did take an offensive lineman, and they took one in the 5th round, but they didn't do too much on the offensive line. John Snyder explains the reason for that.
It was solid at the guard position. It was a very average, I would say, solid at guard, solid at center, and not real great at tackle. You had the two top guys, and then there was a little bit of a gap.
And so that's one of the reasons why John Snyder was not going to be really looking heavy. And remember, they've invested so much in the offensive line over the last 2 years, whether it's, two second-round picks. They've taken Justin Britt, of course, several years ago as a second-round pick. Ethan Posick, they traded a second-round pick to end up getting Dwayne Brown. They've got a first-round pick in, on the right side in Jermaine Ifedi. I mean, what more do you need to see? It's like, okay, you can't keep drafting offensive linemen. If you do, you're not going to get get players on the rest of your team. This year, they took care of the rest of the team. And, of course, the one thing that they did do in the first round is take Rashard Penny, because what they like about him is his ability to do a lot of things.
You know, just the fact that he was splitting time last year, probably. The kids, he's a really nice personality, and then he gets out on the field and just lets it rip. And he was splitting time last year with Pumphrey and never complained about it once. But when you're studying Pumphrey, you're like, holy smokes, who's number 20? You know, he continued that this year. I mean, every time he touched the ball, he's one of those guys you kind of hold your breath. And then when he got to the Senior Bowl, he just did a great job of, I know it seems silly, you know, coming from San Diego State, but, you know, competing with SEC guys and, you know, Big 12 guys, and it wasn't a big deal for him. He had a great week of practice, competed his tail off. So, and he had a great game as well.
Pete Carroll was on with Brock and Salk this morning, and one of the things that was asked about 2017, which of course was a disappointment with no playoff, was this a wake-up call?
No, I was just disappointing. You know, it's just disappointing that we weren't able. We had a really good club to put together, and we just couldn't keep it all healthy and keep it right. But most of all, we lost our balance in the darn running game again. It happened 2 years in a row, and that's why we spent so much focus to try to get it back in there.
Pete Carroll, obviously, big emphasis on the running game. And right now, what he's doing is kind of doing a flashback. He feels that this team is going back into the direction back maybe in 2011, maybe 2010, where they're trying to get some different attitudes.
It's kind of just feels like it felt 4 or 5 years ago, you know, and it's different already. You can tell there's a great enthusiasm. There's a great juice about it. The opportunity for all of these guys is really clear. You know, you don't come in there with guys that have been playing in the same position for 5 or 6 years. You know, it's hard to come in there and really think and hope that you're going to be able to beat those guys out. Well, that ain't what's going on right now. It's a wide open competition the way we love it. And you can sense the energy about that.
And there's going to be energy on the field today as the rookies take the field. And you can check out the show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Well, coming up, Kevin Seifert from ESPN.com attended the summit that was there in New York to talk about the rule changes, kickoffs, what's going on as far as the lower hits on the helmets. We'll get into that with Kevin Seifert of ESPN.com. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios,
on demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app.
Big summit in the National Football League this week. Some coaches attended, but the big thing was they had two things to discuss. The new rule where if you lower your helmet, you can get a penalty and a possible ejection. They went through that. It was very confusing. And then, of course, the summit also went into the future of kickoffs. And again, they weren't going to eliminate the kickoffs this year, but they were going to make some changes. And joining us on the Venue Kings hotline is Kevin Seifert, who went back to New York. And I guess the big thing is, what did you kind of read into what's going on with kickoffs? They make the statement that they're trying to save kickoffs, but you sure don't get the feeling the way they're doing it that they will.
Yeah, I got the sense, John, that there's definitely some people in the league who feel like the die has been cast and the kickoff is just too dangerous. And whether it's this year, next year, some year in the near future, it's going to go away entirely. But there's enough people in the league, including in the league office, who aren't ready to give up on it yet. And so after making all these tweaks that they've made in recent years to reduce returns, they're now – they now asked special teams coaches to come up with ways to make them have less injuries as well. And so this, to me, seems like a last gasp effort. It might work, at least in bringing injury totals down a little bit, because in essence, they're trying to make the kickoff a lot more like a punt, which the injury numbers on punts are not as bad as kickoffs. But whether they can pull it off and whether they can retrain all these special teams guys to do things differently and have different schemes is another story.
So it looks like, was it a 3-point change that they're proposing that they're going to take to the owners meeting in Atlanta? And we'll kind of go point by point on that. I guess the first one was eliminating the two-man wedge.
Yeah, because that, you know, I think that probably speaks for itself. You know, you have two guys. We used to see these 3- and 4-man wedges, which have already been outlawed, but you still had these 2-man wedges where basically two guys, and a lot of times they were big guys, they were linemen, or at least big linebackers or tight ends that were teaming up to hit one guy, knock him down, you know, light him up. And that was responsible for some of the high speed velocity collisions that were causing injuries. So now it's basically one-on-one blocking. One guy can go after another guy, but two guys can't go after one guy. And that, and that was what the two-man wedge was supposed to do.
Okay, so the second one was, and this one I think was very curious, no running starts. You basically line up at the 35-yard line and then go as fast as you can from there, as opposed to, you know, going back 8-9 yards and then get that running start.
Yeah, and the other part of that is, you would just get that, you know, it used to be even more than 5 yards. You'd get 10 or whatever, but it gave these guys that much more space to build up the speed. And those are the two things that they're trying to attack is the amount of space that people have to run before there's contact and the amount of speed that they're able to pick up before there's contact, because those are sort of the physics involved as they explain it to us and to the people in the summit room that were responsible for these injuries. So, whether that's enough to bring down the force enough to not cause the injuries, we'll see. But that was the idea behind that.
And then the third, and this one I find very curious, because, again, you'll have to explain the significance of this. There's only going to be now, if they do approve this, you know, three guys back awaiting the kick. And so you'll have your returner and two other guys, where the other eight guys are going to basically be, you know, 15 yards away or 10 yards away from the kickoff coverage team.
Have to be within 15 yards of the kickoff coverage, and there can't be any blocking in that 15-yard area. So that takes away those. You'll see occasionally on kickoffs in the past where a guy on the return team, instead of moving back to set up his block, would just run right at a guy and just who was already had a running start right at the line of scrimmage and trying to knock him off right there. So you can no longer do that. And the idea behind having the eight guys up there is to sort of simulate the punt. Obviously there's not nearly that much distance between people on a punt, but the idea would be you would essentially, instead of running at a guy to try to block him, you would be running with him and as he goes down the field, and you would be doing more of the hand fighting and the pushing that goes on when you see a gunner go down the field on a punt, as opposed to the just running at two guys running at each other and creating these collisions. And so that was in the minds of the special teams guys, that's actually one of the biggest changes, is that because you have that many guys within 15 yards of the ball, you're going to have essentially less physical contact than you would have had otherwise in their minds.
Yeah. Now, the interesting part is that to me, it seems like that would almost promote better returns, because now you're getting the coverage teams down a little bit slower.
Yeah.
The more open space for the returner to gain momentum and get going. I mean, what's a play that may be eliminated next year is kickoff returns. You know, it could actually be more exciting this year than any in the last several.
Yeah, and that's their hope, is to have the best of both worlds, is that the changes we just talked about make it safer, but they also allow a returner to be able to get better blocking and a better lane set up for him to run. Because I think everyone agrees that when the kickoff is done right, it's awesome to watch and fun and game changing. And we know how important field position is, but just from an entertaining standpoint, one of the most fun plays in the game. And so that's their hope. You know, I don't know if they're being naive or they're being too hopeful, or this is just kind of we're always optimistic at this time of the year about everything in football and in sports. But that's their hope, is that it can be safer but also be more entertaining at the same time.
Now, the Tuesday session was one that was geared on, I still think, a very confusing rule, which is the head down. And, they come back and they say, we reviewed 40,000 plays and it would only be 4 ejections. But when they come back and say there could be 2 to 5 penalties that they spot a game under this, to me, that's a concern.
Yeah, and you know that was the 2 to 5 number was the result of them going back through the video of every play last year and seeing how many times that happened, where a guy lowered his helmet to initiate contact with an opponent part of his body. Now, does that mean that every time it happens, there's going to be a penalty? You know, probably not any more likely than every time there's a hold, we have a penalty. You know, we know that there's occurrence. So it's really, but so it all boils down to, and I think several of the coaches that I talked to there, one of them was Anthony Lynn from the Chargers. It all will boil down to how these officials officiate it, how they're instructed to officiate it, how strictly they have to maintain the rule. You know, Troy Vincent, when we asked him about that, he's the NFL's top football operations guy, and he said, we're telling the officials when they see it, call it, which is kind of like all the other penalties, too. They don't tell anybody not to call it when they see it. So we really don't have a great idea, and it's not possible yet. I don't even think the officials know yet how exactly they're going to officiate it, because helmets are lowered and contact is often made, you know, probably on every play, one way or the other. I'm not saying that's the right way to play football or not, but that is the reality of what happens. And Rich McKay, who is the chairman of the competition committee, tried to make the point that there's a distinction to be made between lowering your head and lowering your head to initiate contact. Lowering your head is not going to be penalized according to what his hope is, but lowering your head and initiating contact is going to be a penalty. So it's kind of the difference of a quarterback sneak where the quarterback gets the ball and puts his head down and runs, didn't really strike anybody with his helmet, and so that's no penalty. But if a pulling guard comes around the side and he lowers his helmet and sort of, in a way, and to use an old term, spears the defensive back, then that's supposed to be a penalty, and that would be a significant change for the flagrant that can be an ejection. So all that's to say is I think I understand on paper what the penalty is supposed to be and what it's not supposed to be, but how it will be officiated is anyone's guess.
Yeah, and that's what I think is going to be scary. Now, at the end of the meeting, did Anthony Lynn and Dan Quinn and the other head coaches that were there, did they have a good idea where it stands, or were they as confused going in as they were now?
Yeah, I think what Dan Quinn said, he's like, I think I'm 90% there is what he said. And he also said, like, I really just want to know how they're going to call it. What they decided to do was to create a league-wide video that would basically instruct every and it would basically instruct every position group independently how to play the game so that you don't get this type of penalty. If you're a running back, how to pick up a blitz without lowering your helmet and hitting and initiating contact with an opponent. If you're a guard, how to block without doing that. If you're a running back, how to protect yourself and drive for extra yards without lowering your helmet and initiating contact. And then they're going to run it by the NFL to make sure that that is, in fact, what we're talking about. And then they're going to distribute it to all the teams and hope that over the course of training camp that they can sort of educate their players. Because in the end, obviously the coaches want safety, but the bigger thing is they don't want to have 15-yard penalties against them. And so they're trying to understand it, maybe for different reasons, but just as importantly as anybody else is. And so I think it's fair to say, John, training camp is going to be a mess. Preseason is going to be a mess. And hopefully, like a lot of new rules and a lot of points of emphasis over the course of the month first month of the regular season, it'll get worked out and we'll hopefully not be talking about it on a daily basis by the end of the year.
Yeah, I get the feeling we probably will, but at least we got a chance to talk about it today and, of course, get updated. Sure. Kevin Seifert from ESPN.com. Thanks for joining us in the Ben U. Kings Hotline. And that's Kevin Seifert, of course. You can check out the show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. We'll come back and we'll go behind the lines. Lots of stuff going on in the National Football League. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the Professor John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
It's going to be a fun day. Rookies are now reporting and, of course, having their mini camps. 9 teams have started today. And, of course, Seattle being one of them. And, of course, a good chance to take a look and see who did well. I know Cleveland's going to be out there. And the reports on what it looks like with Baker Mayfield and what it looks like with Denzel Ward. They're talking top two picks. The Jets are going to be out there with you know, having Sam Darnold go. So that's going to be the fun part about today, to kind of get the idea. And we're already having draft choices signed. Minnesota Vikings have signed about, I think, six of their draft choices, including their second-round pick. So it's a busy time, and it's also a busy time right now to sort out what's going on at the quarterback position, because, you know, Matt Ryan became the first $30 million guy. And of course, and Mar, this is the one thing that I just, it still bugs me a little bit. And again, I'm happy for Matt Ryan, but when everybody reports the numbers, right, they have to go to the guarantees. And again, the guarantees tend to be a little bit, they're always exaggerated. Well, it's $100 million. And everybody goes, woo, he gets $100 million guaranteed. Well, they gave him a $46.5 million signing bonus. And then basically, what you do is that you guarantee most of the first 2 years, and then in the third year, you give an injury guarantee. But people were automatically thinking, oh, it's $100 million, and it's going to revolutionize everything. None of this stuff is revolutionary. I mean, again, what's revolutionary is getting the average up to $30 million, and you know it's going to go up another tick when Aaron Rodgers gets his deal.
So Kirk Cousins' deal was reportedly fully guaranteed. Mm-hmm. Is Matt Ryan's not?
No.
What,
no.
Isn't it strange to you that he wouldn't try to make sure that he got at least what Kirk Cousins got in that aspect?
Well, here's where the difference is. Kirk Cousins took less to go to Minnesota, because he probably could have gotten a $30 million deal to go to the New York Jets.
Okay.
And so, and that's one of the kind of the old tricks in negotiation. If you can get somebody to take a little bit less, you'll be willing to guarantee more. And so, yeah, his contract was guaranteed, but think about what the guarantee was. It was what, $84 million, right? Because he took the shorter deal. And so because of that, now he's going to have a chance to go back, and because again, it was a 3-year deal at $84 million, but it wasn't $100 million guarantee, which of course nobody gets. And Matt Ryan gets the 94 because, you know, the 94.5 because he got the 46.5 in signing bonus, and then the first 2 years guaranteed. And so when you throw that all together, that's going to get it up there. But that's the thing that drives me crazy. And then, you know, when you hear the reaction, and that's why that's kind of bugging me, everybody jumps to the guarantee as opposed to the number. Because they think, wow, look at the guarantee. That's ridiculous. You got all that amount guaranteed. Where you go in the NBA, you get a $40 million contract, and that's all guaranteed. In baseball, you get a $30 million deal, and that's all guaranteed. In football, there's just not enough clout to be able to get the guaranteed deals. Yeah, if you want to take less and take $28 million as opposed to $30, you might be able to get the whole thing guaranteed because you're not spreading it out. And here's a technicality that'll probably bore you, Mara, and bore everybody else. What happens if you guarantee something, you know, with a skill guarantee, a fully guaranteed deal, not an injury guarantee, but a skill guarantee? What you have to do is you have to fund it. So
like
another
Richard Sherman, he has skill guarantees right now, right?
I don't think he has much. No. In fact, I think he basically gets the $9 million, and then it can kick in. He doesn't have any guarantees until next year. I mean, again, you know, you obviously in the year that you sign the deal, I mean, you're going to have the guarantee because you're going to get the money. But when you do the second year or the third year, what you have to do is fund the guarantee. So like if you're guaranteeing, you know, 94.5 and you pay, you know, 46.5 and you pay, you know, the base salary and all that, you have to put the other $40 million in an account and guarantee that. Owners don't like doing that. And if they can get away from doing it, that's why one of the big things I think when they go into the next collective bargaining agreement is take that outdated formula and not do it. Why fund the third year of a guarantee? I mean, it gives teams more flexibility. But again, it's like, for example, if your payroll is going to be $160 million, right, and you have $177 million cap, and then you come back and you say, okay, we're going to put another $40 million into next year's guarantee, now the owner's putting out $200 million. Well, if you keep doing that too often, the owner doesn't like that. And so that's just one of the bugaboos. And again, it just drives me crazy when everybody talks about the guarantees and this guarantee. It's like, no, don't worry about the guarantees. In football, that's one thing that they need to get better if you're the player, but they don't have it getting better. But nevertheless, you know, as we go through that contract, and most of the numbers are out right now, it's still pretty good against the cap. I think, you know, the big thing is that what you don't want to do is get it, you know, over 15% of your cap on an annual annual basis, because that's where you can go. You can, if you can put 85% on the rest of the team, you're going to be fine. And it looks like if the cap goes up significantly next year, no problem. They can fit that deal in. But you, as these deals go up, I mean, that's what you have to start worrying about, because it starts to eat up so much of the cap. But 15 to 18% is a good mark right now. Now, as far as the next deal, I think it's going to be Aaron Rodgers. I think he's going to get 31.75, probably, you know, close to the same number in guarantee, and then Russell Wilson. And you can understand now, Mark Rodgers is a baseball agent. He's used to getting fully guaranteed contracts. He wasn't able to do that with Russell Wilson. I'm sure he's not going to be able to do that, but I think he's going to try to do something that's going to be a little bit different, because again, he's coming from a different stock. He's coming from a different background. And the first time, I mean, you know, he had to accept taking the 21-9, which he really didn't want to do, because, you know, Russell wanted that deal and it made sense to get that deal done. He wanted to top Aaron Rodgers, but he couldn't. And I think in this case, whatever Aaron Rodgers gets, I think you're going to see Russell Wilson get a tick behind that. Now, how that fits into the plan for Mark Rodgers, don't know. We'll have to see. But still, you've got to take care of your quarterback. You've got to make sure. And I think that Russell, obviously, he likes it here. I mean, every sentence he has, anytime he ends a press conference, he gets to go Seahawks. He's been so successful with this franchise. I mean, since coming here, he's had the second most wins of any quarterback since 2012. The only one that tops him is Tom Brady. So, Mara, how worried would you be about him getting some deal? Because ultimately, I think he'll get the deal.
Yes, I think they have to work out a deal with him, but I don't think that it's going to be easy. I think he's definitely going to, you know, just seeing what we've seen from his agent so far, definitely try to get, see if he can get more than Rodgers if possible. And I think it's going to take a little while to work everything out. But it, I guess it's good. You know, I think most of what Carroll has said this offseason has kind of alluded to the fact that they did this shift with the coaching staff and with getting some of the players out of here just to kind of get back to who they were and get anyone out that wasn't buying in. But I guess it's also going to be good for them, because they're going to have a lot of younger players on smaller deals while they're trying to invest all this money in Russell Wilson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How did you like the comment that was reiterated today by Pete Carroll, saying basically, hey, good riddance, Richard Sherman and Michael Bennett?
I think it's completely fair. You know, they asked him if he was sad that Sherman and Bennett took shots at him on the way out, and he said, no, I'm not sad. I know where their hearts are, but at the same time, you know, he's allowed to take a little shot back himself.
Mm-hmm. I thought that was interesting, because again, that was a pretty solid shot, and that's the second time he's reiterated that. And you know, it's like, I guess, and you'd like to find out exactly what that meant, as far as, you know, what didn't they buy into that you know, kind of put them in that position.
You know, I think that those guys, maybe, you know, the Legion of Boom and you know, Michael Bennett, I feel like was underrated for a little while there, but then people talked about how underrated he was for so long, mm-hmm. that he was starting to get a lot of attention too, especially in things like the top 100. And I don't know, I think maybe they started to believe their own hype a little bit, became a little bigger than the team.
That's something apparently that Pete Carroll wasn't going to tolerate anymore. Hey, you can check out the show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Well, coming up next, let's get in some baseball talk here. Interesting series coming up against the Angels. Nathan Bishop from Baseball Perspective and Dome and Bedlam will be joining us next. We're going to get deep into this series and deep into this team. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.